Thank you. Be seated.
I guess our breakfast is short for now.
Yeah.
Court is ready to hear arguments for petitioners in Wilson versus Winston.
May it please the court, Mr. Eric Schultz will present arguments for the petitioner. He has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Schultz, and with me at counsel table is Mr. John Judge. The issue before this court is the scope of an examining physician's duty not to injure an examinee in the absence of a physician-patient relationship. Texas Rehabilitation Commission sent Gorilla Standifer two respondents for an examination. Dr. Winsett conducted a hands-on physical examination that included such matters. Dr. Winsett conducted a hands-on physical examination that included such matters as an EKG, blood test, urine test, and a chest x-ray. Dr. Winsett's review of the chest x-ray revealed that Mrs. Standifer had a 3-centimeter cancerous mass on her right lung, yet Dr. Winsett did not inform Mrs. Standifer of the cancer on her lung.
Did he have any post-examination conference with her at all?
The record does not indicate that.
Did he ever even saw her again?
No.
Did he actually make the x-ray?
It was done at his direction, yes.
So he reviewed it, but yes. There's no evidence in the record that he ever had any contact at all with Ms. Winsett?
Following the examination, no. During the examination, he certainly took her complete medical history and all of that, and certainly could have informed her by mail of the results of the x-ray or by telephone.
Did he tell her that the results would be communicated to someone else who would contact her further?
No.
There is no evidence one way or another about that? Or
there is no evidence one way or the other.
You would have us hold that there can be a medical malpractice without a doctor-patient relationship. How would you write the standard of care? How would you define the duty?
But the duty here was already recognized by the Court of Appeals. It's the duty not to injure. It's the duty based on common law negligence.
And that's the only duty you're asking.
That's
for.
The only duty that I'm asking this court to and consider.
And your only argument here is that failing to tell her the results of what he found was an injury.
Exactly. That was how he injured. We are not contending that he owed either a duty to detect or discover a disease, conduct additional tests beyond those he actually conducted, or to treat a person who was not his patient. This is a duty not to injure. This court perhaps best phrased that duty in the El Chico Corporation versus Poole case, where the court said the public policy behind the law of negligence dictates that every person is responsible for injuries which are the reasonably foreseeable consequences of his act or omission. And that's what we're talking about in the present case, is an omission. Did Dr. Winsett omit to do something he should have done? Which omission?
What are the damages from this injury?
Pardon me?
What are the damages from this injury, assuming that it's an injury?
The damages are going to flow from the loss of Mrs. Standifer's life.
Why is that?
Because
the only injury is not having been told. Not failure to diagnose or failure to treat or anything else.
Because the summary judgment evidence at page 58 of the transcript, our expert witness affidavit, established that it was the delay between Dr. Winsett's discovery of the cancer and Mrs. Standifer's ultimate discovery and ability to seek treatment that directly contributed to her substantially worsened prognosis and to her ultimate death by cancer.
So this is a lost chance case?
That's one way to phrase it.
Is your lost chance more than 50% though?
Yes, it is more than 50%. That's completely.
we're having...
Ms. Schultz, if the policeman can be found and see if that conduct can be, something else can be done for about 30 minutes.
Let's see if I can think of my question now. We have a doctor who is hired to look for certain things, I guess, by the Social Security group. And so he's hired to do that function, and he comes across something else that doesn't, I guess, is not something to be considered as part of what he was hired to do. You say he has a duty not to injure, but if he isn't hired to look for this thing and just observes it as a part of his activity, how does that translate into a breach of a duty not to injure when it's really the duty arises because of the discovery of something and the duty is to disclose? I don't know how we get to a duty not to injure because...
I'm not exactly sure I'm following your question, but...
I'm not sure I'm asking it right, but...
The duty between the examining physician and whoever hired him, in this case, Texas Rehabilitation Commission, that's one duty that's out there, whether or not he conducted the test that they wanted performed on Mrs. Sandifer. There is a separate duty, though, that's owed in tort to Mrs. Sandifer, the duty not to injure. It's separate from whatever contractual or tort duties flow between the examining physician and
the
Texas
duty is also recognized in the Medical Practices Act as not for the duty of physician-patient relationship. No, there can be no third-party intervention by statute.
And in this case, however, we are not getting in the Texas...
I understand that, but it is recognized in the law.
Yes.
By statute, that the physician's duty is to the patient, in this case, the one being examined, even though someone else might be paying the fee.
Is the duty not to injure the basis for the Fifth Circuit decision in Green against Walker, or is that perhaps a different way of characterizing the nature of the duty that was owed here?
In Green versus Walker, which is the case that's most directly on point to this case, the duty was based upon a Louisiana code provision not to damage. The Louisiana code provision not to damage is in no manner any different than the common law duty not to injure that was imposed upon Dr. Winsett in this case.
What if Dr. Winsett had done a wholly inadequate job of examination, had just absolutely failed to do what he was hired to do, and had not made a discovery? Would your standard of duty not to injure go so far as to cover that, or would it stop short of that, and if so, how would it be phrased to stop short of covering that type of conduct?
Well,
if he had seen this x-ray and totally misread it, it just missed the law.
Right. We are not characterizing any duty in the present case as a duty to discover a disease, and I think that's kind of what your question is getting at. But this court certainly could, if it wanted to, take it one step further, encompass a duty, a limited duty to discover, but that's certainly not necessary to resolve this case.
Aren't you talking about a different case of duty to diagnose and examine and diagnose, to conduct a thorough examination and make such discoveries are within scientific competence to make. That's a totally different case than having made the discovery and failing to disclose it to the person most affected.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to get the philosophical basis for that distinction, if indeed it's a distinction you're urging, as I thought it was.
Yes, I am urging that distinction.
And once we do recognize a duty to someone that you do not have the patient-physician relationship, then what is the What are the policy reasons? What is the philosophical basis for cutting it off at actual knowledge?
Well, when this court looks at a new duty that it has not addressed before in Otis Engineering Corporation versus Clark, in the El Chico Corporation versus Poole, this court lists several interrelated factors that the court considers in the imposition of a duty. The court said in El Chico, the foremost consideration is the foreseeability of the risk of injury. How could anything be more foreseeable, any injury be more foreseeable, than for a doctor to discover a life-threatening condition yet fail to inform the examinee about that? And the burdens of asking to be placed on the physician in this case is hardly onerous. We just simply want the physician to notify the examinee of the existence of any life-threatening condition discovered during the examination.
Is there evidence that this physician thought someone else was going to do that?
No, there is no evidence. He took her medical history and apparently must have realized that she didn't know or have any past history of lung cancer. So the answer to your question is no.
So while there might be a broader duty to disclose the results of the examination, you say that you don't have to show a broad duty to disclose all the circumstances of an examination, only a disclosure that would, the failure to disclose would cause harm to the patient.
Exactly.
Or injure the patient.
Right. It just exactly what the court in the Green versus Walker case held, that when an examining physician fails to disclose findings that would cause an imminent danger to the examinee's health, mental health or well-being.
So we really don't have to decide in this case, in order for you to succeed, how far the duty to disclose might extend in other circumstances.
No, you do not. Actually, I have presented a fairly narrow question to this court. It's the first time this court has addressed this type of issue in the absence of a physician-patient relationship.
Is there any distinction between life-threatening and any injury?
The distinction in my own mind goes to the fact of the foreseeability of the risk of harm. That's how the court determines the duty. I mean, a life-threatening injury certainly is a clearly foreseeable risk of harm. If the doctor discovers, well, you know, patient has strep throat like I do or something, then no.
Well, strep throat can turn into rheumatic fever and cause danger to the lining of the heart and death. Can you give us a line of demarcation?
Well, those are more the fact-oriented questions of breach and causation that we're talking about that aren't involved in the concept of duty. We're talking here about duty.
Okay, let me ask you, on the question of duty, suppose I have been hired, as this doctor was, by some other organization to check whatever their requirements are. The examinee complains about a condition during the examination. If we try and craft narrowly a duty to disclose what's observed, can in fact that be narrowly defined to avoid any, to make a doctor comfortable that they are, in this case, have a duty disclosed, and in this case, they don't have a duty disclosed, and particularly where it is not an observed circumstance, like a spot on the lung, but a complaint that then is brought up as, had the doctor been competent, that complaint would have registered in that doctor's mind that further examination was required to determine the seriousness of the complaint. Is there any way we could simply rule in this case, say, doctor, you blew it, bad facts, you should have disclosed to it, you knew it, she knew it, everybody knew it, and distinguish that so clearly that the very next doctor who is hired by someone else to check out the fact sheet and has a patient come before them and feels comfortable in not pursuing the examination based on this complaint?
Again, you are raising the question of a duty to discover a disease, and that's not what we're that's not what it's issue here. The duty to disclose information, as the court in Green versus Walker noted, is limited by, to the extent of the tests that are actually conducted.
The bottom line of your argument is that the doctor's relationship is with the patient. The patient may be applying for a job which requires consent to a physical examination by the company's friendly physician. It may have to do with the insurance coverage, where you have to consent to a physical examination. But when that doctor examines you, regardless of who's paying the tab, when that doctor examines you, the duty between you and that doctor is to you. If something is discovered in the course of the required examination that would indicate further examination or some kind of a medical therapy, then that doctor is under duty to disclose to you. I think you may have a problem here. You probably ought to get that looked at, or you probably ought to go see a specialist and have further examination, or something to that effect. The duty to inform, not the duty to treat, not the duty to provide a therapy itself, because that was not the role which he was introduced in these circumstances, but the duty to at least inform me that
the duty
probably
to inform
should.
Is separate than the duty to discover or the duty to
failed
treat.
Failed to conduct an adequate examination, which subsequently resulted in a poor insurance risk, or someone who should not be employed properly for a job, that's a problem between him and the contractor who's paying the tab. Always, when a physician undertakes to examine a person, that person is his patient, at least for purposes of that examination, with all the duties involved. And I challenge you to find a physician in this state who would tell you that's not his patient.
There's certainly a relationship, yes, between the examining physician and the examining.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear arguments from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Thomas Riney will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. What petitioners actually seek in this case is to create a new duty. That is a duty on the doctor to diagnose and treat, or at least to diagnose and make recommendations for treatment or for further follow-up.
Well, that's not what they say there.
But I believe the facts of this case indicate that the practical effect of what they seek is the establishment of that new duty. The facts here show that this patient was examined solely for the purpose of determining the rehabilitative potential for the Texas Rehabilitation Commission. The patient did not select the doctor. The examinee, Ms. Standifer, was treated by other doctors before and after this particular examination. Another doctor had examined Mrs. Standifer, had x-rayed her in connection with this same application, and in her words, he didn't tell me nothing, so we don't have a person who went to the examination with the expectation that she would get a report from the doctor. It is unchallenged that she neither requested nor received any reports from Dr. Winters' examination.
Of the patient or examinee or whatever terminology you want to use, any justification for the failure of the physician to perform a duty towards that person if that duty exists?
The only duty that exists is not to cause harm to the patient by the conduct of the examination.
She went into this position privately, personally, and just said, I just want to get a checkup, doc. And he conducted the same examination, and
behaved as this physician did in this case and failed to disclose to her as this physician did in this case, do you think there would be a strange doctor, first-time appointment, you know, I'm going to go in, doc, I just want to get a checkup, make sure everything's okay?
Yes, there.
And this is the first time, not asking for an aspirin, not asking for any treatment at all, just want a checkup. That duty, that physician obviously has a duty to that patient to disclose whatever that physician discovers that might impact on that patient's health and well-being.
That is correct.
Why is this different? Because somebody else is paying the tab.
Because
the doctor has no doctor-patient relationship with the Rehabilitation Commission, the insurance company, or anybody else. The only human being that's involved, that doctor in a physician or examining role, is that person.
There is no physician-patient relationship under those circumstances. The payment of the fee makes no difference. Certainly if a person goes to the Veterans Administration, is eligible for treatment by a VA physician, and enters into a physician-patient relationship, that is an agreement, a contractual agreement, voluntarily entered into by both parties, either expressed or implied.
What was the purpose of this examination?
The purpose of the examination in this case?
What was the purpose of this examination?
To determine whether she had rehabilitative potential in connection with her application for Social Security disability benefits.
Examination of her physical condition.
If
she had been able to go, if the Rehabilitation Commission had said, provide us with an examination from a private physician, a report that answers these questions, and we want you to have a thorough physical examination. You go to the doctor, and we want a health report from the doctor. And that doctor had examined her and discovered the same thing this doctor discovered and failed to disclose it to her. And he gave the report to her, and she carried it back. Would that doctor have violated the duty?
I believe so. It would depend, I suppose, to some extent on what she contacted the doctor to do. But if the patient went in to the doctor and entered into this voluntary relationship, which the law creates the physician-patient relationship, and accordingly, and if the cases are clear that it arises from that relationship, the duty to exercise ordinary care in the examination, both from a malfeasance point of view as well as a nonfeasance point of view. And I think that's a significant distinction in this case. The courts have always held that in the absence of that voluntary physician-patient relationship, that the only duty owed by the doctor is not to cause harm to that patient by the examination. What is being asserted here is...
Why is this not voluntary?
They did not voluntarily enter into an agreement, to treat or to diagnose the other for the benefit of those parties.
He didn't voluntarily examine her, and she didn't voluntarily submit to that examination?
But they did not create a relationship between one another such as the law would allow before she would have the right to receive the professional skill and judgment of the physician, as the case is saying.
But that relationship doesn't exist under our law.
Well, the cases say that it is that physician-patient relationship that gives rise to the duty owed by the physician to his patient to have the expertise and to use reasonable care in his treatment. The treatment is more than just not harming the patient by conducting the examination, burning the patient by x-ray or whatever. The patient goes and asks for a checkup. They're saying, I don't want you just not to physically hurt me during this examination. I'm asking for you to diagnose. That was not the case here, and the cases have been clear almost uniformly, with the exception of Green versus Walker, that as long as the physician does not harm that person who has not the patient of the doctor during the examination, there is no legal duty and therefore no cause of action.
Well, how can in the course of an examination, even without a thorough follow-up diagnosis, how can it be argued rationally that that did not harm this woman when he detected a cancerous mass and did not disclose it?
If I might correct one statement made during the opening statement by petitioner's counsel, that is not the record that the doctor discovered a cancerous mass. What the doctor reported in his exam was a 2-centimeter mass in the right hilar area. That is why I say the duty that is being sought here is one to diagnose. It requires the physician to rule out the possibility that that could be a cyst, that it could be a pulmonary embolus in a patient who had a pulmonary embolus, according to the report just a year before, or some type of fibroma or abscess formation. That is why I say that. Excuse me?
Or carcinoma.
Or carcinoma. And that's why I say the duty goes farther than simply to disclose to the patient what was there. If he had said, if they suggested it's simply disclosure, would it make sense to say, while I took your x-ray of your heart in connection with the rehabilitative exam, I incidentally noticed a hiatal mass 3 centimeters in diameter on the right. Probably that would not do the patient any good. There would have to be a discussion as to the possible significance of that. You need to see an internist. You need to see a chest surgeon. You need to have some other type of test, perhaps a biopsy. And that's why I say the duty that is sought to be imposed here goes beyond merely disclosing details. It is imposing upon that doctor to make a diagnosis and either to follow up with treatment or to make recommendations for treatment.
But what you've described to me is not a diagnosis. What you've described to me is a detection where the doctor says this may require a diagnosis.
Well, of course,
I don't know what this is. This may require a diagnosis and you ought to go get one.
Well, it would require him to make a differential diagnosis so that he could determine those possibilities and determine what follow-up treatment was appropriate.
Does the patient have a reasonable expectation that when he goes to a healthcare provider like a physician for an examination that somebody else requested, that if something is out of the ordinary, the doctor would tell him, you need to follow up on this, check up on it?
That would certainly be true in certain contexts. For example, some of these cases arise out of the annual physical required by employers. It would certainly be more reasonable to expect under those circumstances that a doctor is seeing a patient for an annual physical, that that patient is probably relying upon that doctor to do a complete diagnosis. That's why I think the facts here are significant. She was being seen by several other doctors, including 3 doctors as her family doctor, said they even made house calls, had already been examined by one other for the Social Security, and did not expect to get a report from this particular doctor. So under the facts of this case, whether it would be reasonable to expect that the doctor would go beyond evaluating her rehabilitative potential and to say there are other findings here, whether it be lab findings, x-ray findings, or whatever, that suggests some type of follow-up, I'm not sure that under the facts of this case that would be a reasonable expectation.
Why would it be a bad thing to impose this duty on this type of physician? What, in light of the relatively minimal burden that would be imposed on the physician to say this potential problem, you need to get this checked. What are the reasons why we should not impose the duty sought by the petitioner?
They're not any more than in any situation where one perceives a danger to another. But our law is clear that perception of a dangerous situation imposes a moral duty to either render aid or to warn, but does not impose a legal duty absent special circumstances or absent some type of relationship between the person observing the danger and the person who's potentially in harm's way.
Kind of like no duty to rescue? Would
yes. Yes. Or if I see a dead limb on my neighbor's tree about to fall and that could fall as he walked out to his car one morning, I may have a moral duty to warn him that some danger is about to befall him, but I do not have a legal duty to do that. And it's certainly no burden on me to do that. In all likelihood.
Counsel, Dr. Winsett made this examination at the request of the Rehabilitation Commission, is that right?
Yes.
I assume he was on a list that they had prepared of doctors that do these things, and he had probably made other examinations at the request of the Commission.
I would assume so.
Does the Commission have any rules or regulations that they impose on their examining physicians as to how, what procedures be taken, what reports are to be made, what contacts might be made by the physician after the examination?
I'm not aware of any, I did not find any statutory regulation. Whether there are internal regulations, I cannot answer that.
There was no evidence that he did only what he was expected to do or hired to do by the Rehabilitation Commission. If he had pled, and if there had been evidence that he was asked to do just this, and he did just that, and he was prohibited to say anything to anyone else or pass on any information to anyone else, then it might change the case. Perhaps not the case here. Is that right?
The first part, he did present summary judgment evidence that what he was asked and what he did. You're correct on the second part. There was no evidence that he was prohibited from doing anything further.
How would you characterize the relationship if it's not doctor-patient, if the doctor would?
Well, the relationship exists really between Dr. Winsett and the Texas Rehabilitation Commission in terms of a legal relationship. Now, what the Green versus Walker case did in Louisiana law was to create a new relationship called examining physician and examinee relationship. And it was from that newly created legal relationship that they said the duty arose. Green was not a failure to disclose case. It was a lung cancer case, but it was a failure to detect case, failure to detect the findings on x-ray at all, failing to find that the x-ray was abnormal. So there, my position is there is no legal relationship between the examining doctor and the person being examined. The only legal relationship under existing Texas law is between the physician and the person with whom he has contracted to provide the service.
Does the examinee have to pay for the exam in order to create a doctor-patient relationship?
No. Clearly not.
And what is necessary to create a doctor-patient relationship under the facts of this case?
Under the facts of this case, if she had said to the doctor, I'm here for Social Security purposes, but I'd like for you to be my doctor also, and he had agreed to do so, or if she had began asking questions, doctor, I've had these symptoms, some of them related to my heart, would you tell me what you think is causing them? Then I think there would perhaps be, and if the doctor agrees to do so, then I think you could say there is the implication that that voluntary agreement was entered into. Same thing if he says to her, there's something on your x-ray that's abnormal. I think once they go further there, once he volunteers to do that, and they start going further and discuss the diagnosis and so forth, then I think that you could have an implied agreement that that arose.
Was lack of duty the only basis for your summary judgment that you pled?
Yes, that's good.
No other grounds were pled?
No. This is not a situation where it's a person who has an isolated contact with the medical system and therefore could reasonably anticipate that she would have a complete physical examination and everything that would be necessary would be done for her. She was on some 10 medications according to the history. And I think one thing that's quite important and is distinctive from some of the cases, particularly the Green versus Walker case, no one is suggesting that the report that Dr. Winsett gave to the Texas Rehabilitation Commission is erroneous or in any way inaccurate. It is reported there. The person with whom he had the relationship got the report. They saw on there, or at least it was there for them to see, his findings on x-ray. It was without comment, without interpretation, without additional recommendation. There is no indication the Texas Rehabilitation Commission informed her either. But this is a significant difference because the duty that existed was to the Rehabilitation Commission, and there has been no suggestion whatsoever, at least at this level, that duty was violated. Now, in the response to the motion for summary judgment, petitioner took the position, number one, there was a physician-patient relationship, and number two, he breached his duty by giving the Texas Rehab Commission an incorrect report. That does not seem to be the position taken here. Existing Texas law, as I said, is that the physician not harm the person during the examination. Now, clearly, she was not harmed. What she was harmed was, according to their theory, was by failing to, I think, make a diagnosis, not simply to disclose, but to make some differential diagnosis and recommend some further follow-up. I would point out in response to a statement earlier,
well,
there was no evidence.
The report said this was a carcinoma, though, didn't it?
No, it did not.
It just said it was a mass.
It said that there was a hilar mass 3 centimeters in diameter on the right. That's all it said. And there has never been anything in the record to indicate that someone else, some other expert, has looked at that x-ray and said, this is a cancerous mass, I can tell from the x-ray.
But was it an indicator that further examination was called for?
There is no evidence in the record on it. One would think
that. The basis of standard medical practice, is this something that an ordinary physician under all the surrounding circumstances would say, we need to look at this further, or you need to have this looked at further?
There was evidence in the record by the expert for the plaintiff that something further should be done, yes. Also, there was a statement made earlier that there was more than a 50% chance of survival rate. That is not correct. The only statement by the expert for the petitioners was that the delay, although it says a six-month delay, the dates are actually given in the affidavit. It's October 28, 87, until it was diagnosed by another physician on February 12, 1988, so it's somewhat less than 4 months. And the expert said that the delay in diagnosis contributed to a substantially worsened prognosis and eventual death. Furthermore, the pleadings didn't even say that it was more than 50%. The amended petition said that with this type of carcinoma, there is up to a 50% disease-free survival rate, but there was no summary judgment evidence indicating that it was a more than 50% survival rate by less than a four-month delay. So again, we do not think that there was an injury, that the duty is not to injure. We think that clearly means that if you're going to take a blood sample, that you not stick the needle in the nerve instead of the vein and cause injury, that you not burn the person by using an excessive dose of x-ray, not taking some type of affirmative action that injures that patient during the examination. That's not a surprising duty. It's completely consistent with other areas of Texas law. But to reach the result that is sought by petitioners creates that additional duty, not just a duty to disclose, but the duty for the physician to rely upon his expertise, to use his expertise, and to do something that neither he nor the patient have entered into an agreement that he would do, that is, become the doctor and determine what's best for the patient. We respectfully ask the court to affirm the decisions of the trial court and the Court of Appeals.
Any other questions? Thank you, Chairman.
Counsel, at the time Desert Storm occurred, there were lawyers who volunteered to draw up powers of attorney and wills for soldiers who were being assigned to duty in Kuwait. Did they have any duty to advise the soldiers if they were volunteering to draw a will or a power of attorney to advise them on potential legal problems that they saw could occur as a result of facts disclosed to them at that interview? And does that have any bearing whatsoever on this duty you'd have imposed on a doctor in this case?
I'm not sure I see the bearing that it does have on the duty in the present case. In the present case, we're talking about life-threatening injuries. It's like, if you want to draw an analogy, perhaps draw the analogy to the person who takes their car into Billy Bob's garage, and Billy Bob discovers a bomb under the hood, and just says, oh, he only brought it in for me to check the oil. I don't injure him when I fail to disclose the bomb that I've discovered, so let's send the customer on his way.
What is your response to the argument that you can't tell from the presence of a mass whether it's a problem or not? Could be, might not be.
The summary judgment evidence in this case established that the mass, the pleadings alleged that the mass that was discovered was consistent with carcinoma. That is what she died of. The mass increased in size between the date it was discovered by Dr. Winsett and the date Mrs. Standifer eventually discovered it. So that's what she died of within a year thereafter.
Would you agree that he would have discharged his duty if he had merely told her she had a mass?
Yes.
Even without saying it was potentially carcinogenic?
Yes.
Do you
I think a mass on the lung is what's going to clue in the examinee, hey, this, there's a mass on my lung, I need to get this looked at.
Do you also agree that there was not a physician-patient relationship in this case between Ms. Stanford and Dr. Winston?
Yes, I agree there was not a physician-patient relationship, but nevertheless, there was a relationship between the two, that of examining physician and examinee. And in that relationship, he owed her the duty not to injure her, and his failure to disclose the life-threatening condition that he discovered was the injury.
Had the mass been previously identified? Had the mass been previously identified?
There is no evidence in the record. There is evidence that from Dr. Wentz's own affidavit that he took her medical history, but there's no evidence one way or the other.
Would Dr. Winsett have discharged his responsibility under the duty that you would have us create if he had given the decedent here a copy of his narrative where he identified the presence of the mass?
Yes, I think that if he had provided her a copy of what he provided to Texas Rehabilitation Commission.
Even though that may be unintelligible to her in the absence of some expert saying.
No, it clearly stated the presence of a 3-centimeter mass on her lung.
But that would not necessarily tell a layperson, would it,
that they
have cancer?
Or do they need to check it further?
I think that if it's written in such, I don't even know, phrase, medicalese, which whatever the equivalent of legalese is, if it's written to that extent that it can't be recognized by the layperson, then I think perhaps there is a duty to go on, and as the Green versus Walker Court says, to take steps, reasonable steps, to make the information timely available to the examinee.
There were several other doctors mentioned by respondent. Has anybody else been sued in connection with Ms. Stanford's death? Are there any companion lawsuits?
No.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments for the day. The foregoing comments are submitted on the of oral arguments. The marshal will now please join us.
The audience will please rise. Oyez, 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 the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.